So I'm going to talk about ad hoc communications. And it's a little bit different than what you've heard here. In fact, when I was asked to come, I said, well, I'm not really involved in ad hoc networking. I have small pieces of things that I want to use in ad hoc networking. But I'm involved in, I think, something that's a lot, perhaps more in the application domain, and I believe a larger picture hope to give you today on ad hoc communications. And it's really about facilitating formal interactions. And I think this quote by Barry Wellman, who's a professor, a sociologist here at U of T, he's been looking at a lot of knowledge and how knowledge is a path among people. And it's very fluid and basically flows through social relationships. And our goal is to look at trying to facilitate these this knowledge exchange. And what has happened in the past few years is that we're starting to live in a connected world. We're basically always connected, and we have much higher bandwidth. And you can see that happening so much now with 802.11 being available. And what occurs with that is that you have to be, the applications that we build have to be very sensitive to day-to-day informal activities that occur in the workplace. So if you try to look at communication features, you see them evolving from personal style of features. I put in the brackets some type of protocols we've been using for this. Personal rules like call processing language protocol, personal mobility handled by SIP, into group style of features that are managed with presence type of systems. And the protocol there is like simple we've been using and virtual private networks. And into ad hoc style of features. So this is where we're pushing the communication domain, where we have to be able to capture context, co-presence relationships, and be able to create dynamic VPNs on the fly. Yes. So just to give you a feeling a bit of forms of interactions that we're interested in. So if you take a look at the top line, you kind of see coffee break interaction, meeting interaction, conferencing interaction. So what we see now, for example, is a conferencing interaction among ourselves. And I try to capture these, just nothing in, this is not actually something that is cast in stone or have any proof of it, but just a feeling of what I had of these type of interactions. And coffee breaks are very informal style of interaction. While the meetings and conferences are formal in nature, that means that they've been scheduled beforehand, and you have an idea of what people will be showing up. The number of persons, of course, grows from left to right, from 2 to 3 people interacting informally all the way up to maybe 10 or 12 in a conferencing session. What's interesting is the networking that's required. The personal networking can be point-to-point or Bluetooth-style communications, moving all the way to enterprise, handling enterprise and the LAN, and even email interactions. Now, what type of authentication do we require? This is kind of interesting because even in conferencing, audio authentication is used. I mean, you understand sometimes who the other person is, or you recognize the voices, so you can authenticate them. Or even if it's video conferencing, you can authenticate them facially. And while in the forms of informal interactions, it's really facial a lot because you meet people and you know who they are. You actually can authenticate who they are. And the information is a little bit different from very small verbal interactions and informal to documents and verbal interactions and conferencing. What's rather interesting is that voice is certainly not dead for anything. Like, voice is still the major way of communicating in conferencing, in all forms of interaction. And that's all augmented by now data and video, of course. So basic knowledge is shared through informal interactions. And, well, I'll do that, repeat the word twice, but we see two forms of interaction, informal and ad hoc. And in informal style interaction, you're trying to always control communication that's occurring. You're basically looking at trying to filter the type of interruptions you can get, and you also want to deal with events and notifications that are coming at you. The way you actually try to promote informal interactions is by trying to send to people notifications about what is happening. So those notifications is what promotes that. So what happens is you walk around and you look into people's offices, you all of a sudden spontaneously begin an interaction because you might see somebody there. And that's the type of things that we're trying to capture and try to create a system that will do that. So this involves projection of availability. In other words, are you available right now or not to talk? And what is your status? What are you doing? And I'm projecting that to other members in the group. On the other hand, ad hoc is closer to what Thomas Kunstad mentioned at the beginning of yesterday, where we come together here, and it's a formal sort of setup. But we want to talk to each other. So you and I want to start instant message discussion, or you want to turn around and you want to join into some other discussion somebody's having. You know, you want access to the network or something like that, and or you want access to a particular service. So those are formal in nature, but ad hoc in a sense that you want to be able to advertise and share service securely. By the way, if you want to interrupt me, go right ahead. I mean, just throughout the whole slide. Got about an hour of discussion. I thought you were moving along pretty good pace. So all this is ad hoc communications goes. That's what I define. It's I don't think the term is really defined in literature and probably used quite loosely, but it's not ad hoc networking. It's basically the communication component of that, and it's much higher picture. So what I see here is there's two things. There's this whole series of applications that you can build around ad hoc nature that leverage the networking components. And what happens is from the network you get information about what is happening, and then from the applications you try to configure the network for your demands. So these applications facilitate collaboration, and the network facilitates the communications. So we can't live without the network, obviously, and we need the applications to try to leverage the network capabilities. So in the application is things like dynamic virtual teams, formation of social communities, or ad hoc collaboration style applications. While this is all being leveraged by fixed networks, ad hoc networks, and sensory networks, the more and more we get into sensor networks and the more information we have of what we're doing and what the context is, and the more we can begin to adapt the applications to the nature of the situation. Ourselves, we've been looking at four crucial areas of work. One is facilitating service discovery. So how can we get access to services that are both in the network and probably personal in nature? So when you carry your laptop, you carry services on your laptop, and the only way a person can talk to you is for them to get access to the same services. That's peer-to-peer in nature. Or you can get access to services that are on the network, like conferencing or bridging services that are available, say, in an area. One thing that I've been working in for a while now has been presence and awareness, which I'll talk about in the next few slides. So we think that the concept of capturing availability and sending them up to other people is very crucial. It's been sort of shown now with the way people start using instant messaging and text messaging with AOL and MSN that presence is a big part of this, you know, sending that information out to other users, and you can see them online. In fact, yesterday was rather interesting. I came out here, and as soon as I signed on to the network, there was a colleague of mine down here I wanted to meet, and she was right on. Like, she knew immediately when I was on, sent me a message and said, okay, when are we getting together? And all we had discussed was that we would get together this weekend, and I wanted to talk to her. And, you know, right off the bat, it just kind of happened. So that's what I'm talking about. That interaction is what the way we share knowledge and capture knowledge through that sort of aspect. But that requires a good deal of policy management because, as you know, you're not available to everybody in the world, so you've got to now deal with policies on setting up first. Actually, Amir will begin to talk later on setting up like policies and services. Who gets access to what services, under what conditions, policies based on whether you're going to be available or not, and policies based on call routing and things like that. In fact, the switches, telephony switches, are just a great big policy executing engine. That's all they are, pretty well. And the final thing is contextual interpretation. And that's an area that I haven't done a great deal in, but we're starting to move into now. We're getting some new students to look at. We have a context model we created just with a partnership in Concordia, but we haven't develop that further to see how we actually get the context automatically. Okay. So let me talk a little bit about some proximity type of work that we've done. This work, it deals with how do I tell which devices I can associate to next to us. So the situation was, as you know, in wireless, the problem we get into is, well, I can use a laptop here, but say I have a telephone next to me. Well, I have no association between these devices. Now, no matter what I do in service discovery, I never get that association. Basically, all I get is some name, and the name might have enough information in it or the attributes to tell me, well, it's in a certain location. But many times we don't know what the location is. Well, I don't know what the name of this room is, for example. I have no clue. I know it's a Fields Institute, and that's about it. So this in this work, a graduate student, we worked with a laptop, say, has a Bluetooth connection. Let's go back a bit. And there's another device that you want to find information about. So what you can do is you can advertise through infrared an ID information type. So we worked with SLP, an extended SLP, such that we created an ID advert protocol. And this ID advert protocol is sent off through infrared, and the other device picks it up. And basically what's carried in that protocol is information about the network address of the device that sent it out. So the result of sending this out is a unicast, say, service advertisement by the device that picked it up. And what drove this a lot is basically the concept of having several places where you may move around to, and say having phones in different parts, and being able to take a PDA and having an ID on your PDA. And what you do is you can beam it to a phone with an AirDAC port, and you can turn around and say, okay, send me your advertisement to me. So it comes back around and advertises it using SLP, its information. And when you capture that, you have the association. So you associate now your PDA or laptop with the phone. So then you can use that service. And the advantage of this particular, I really like this protocol because it's one way, and infrared is extremely cheap. So infrared is a very cheap solution for trying to get proximity information from services. At the same time, we had the same student had worked on something called SetRD Link protocol, which is a two-way type of protocol. Same idea, using infrared, but you have a PDA, and it has could have a connection to the network. I don't really care which type of connection it is, but it sends out a service request out to the network. Now, what happens is you get multitude service replies because all, in this case, the phone sets reply back with their services. And in order to try to decide which one you're going to use, then you again use a beaming operation. And in this case, you get back a reply from that beaming operation about the actual service. It's like a confirmation concept. But it goes back to the same problem of association. Which one of these devices, which I sent information out to, are the ones that I really want to work with? And I think this problem of association is an unsolved problem. It's very difficult because the best form of association actually of physical nature is for you to actually somehow touch something. So infrared is the next level above that where you can have some beaming direction. If you move to RF, then you've lost it. I don't know if anybody's aware of RF ways of trying to manage proximity, then I'm open to suggestions because it's RF has a problem. Of course, it goes through walls and through has a very larger scope. So been quite challenging to look at how do you do proximity type of location sensing. Another project we've worked with has been some interoperability with ad hoc and fixed networks, and not exactly an interoperability problem, but more problem of trying to extend the concept of Bluetooth and IRDA into the IP domain, where what happens is you may have a device that's Bluetooth enabled, and really what you'd like to be able to do is get into a session with somebody. In this case, for example, these two people set up a SIP session, voice session between each other. And what you really want to do is extend that network across that connection you have. So we're getting both into some issues dealing with security in the sense that you're not turning around and saying, okay, everything in the network I want to extend out. What I really want to do is I want to talk to you, and between you and I, what I want to do is get access to your services on the other end. I've got Bluetooth protocol enabled device here, and you've got something on your end. You may have IRDA, or you may have Bluetooth, or you may have a PC. So we're trying to looking now building a gateway where, in this case, somebody wants to send a picture through the camera. They use a Bluetooth device, and what occurs is we translate SDP, Service Discovery Protocol, in Bluetooth, to an SLP kind of protocol. We use SLP between gateways and then back onto SDP on the other end. Now, if this device on the right was not, say, a picture frame or some sort, but in fact a PC, then we can get away with one gateway because it will back into IP network. What we're really trying to leverage here is profiles, because in Bluetooth, profiles are actually very at a very high level. So people understand profiles. Instead of using just the SLP model, what we want to do is ride the profile over SLP. So start using a Bluetooth profile in an SLP world. And what happens, and in this case, for example, we can use an object push profile in Bluetooth to push the actual photograph onto the picture frame on the other side based on the session. So when the session comes down, those services disappear. And what's driving this idea came actually from a TV show. It was very interesting. There was a bunch of people in a party, and they took this photograph. A bunch of policemen came, and they had a wireless phone. And they phoned up their friend, and they transferred all the photographs to the wireless phone to the other end. The guy was on a PC. And I thought about it, and I thought, that's doable. I mean, it's actually what I... This is, in fact, the same model as being done by the ICT 2000, like the 3G, 4G wireless networks. This is, in fact, what they're trying to do. And it's my belief that this is what you'll see more and more of now. It'll be based on sessions and rather than just based on network access. So this particular project has these features. It extends short-range Bluetooth communication via an existing IP network. And what we like about it is that it doesn't change the Bluetooth stack. Now, there's been a lot of argument towards saying, well, let's run IP over Bluetooth. And I think eventually IP will become dominant. But at the current stage, I think there's a lot of merit in what's going on in the Bluetooth world and the stack themselves. And in this situation, we don't have to try and superimpose onto what's there right now a particular type of, say, a service discovery algorithm or something like that. The other thing is that we're moving into also running the Serrata. Serrata and Bluetooth are very similar in nature, so we can actually interoperate between them quite easily. The drawback of this is that to be able to do this, we're working more at the sort of RF comm layer in Bluetooth, and so we're supporting OBEX profiles. So it becomes hard to support other forms of profiles, right? And yet trying to figure out how to support like a voice profile component. So that voice profile would be something like, again, if I had a wireless headset, I'd be able to communicate straight through to you through, say, a video session that you're trying to do. So I can add that sort of voice profile on top of that, but I'm not clear how to do that right now. And the other thing is that the services are all managed based on sessions. Okay. So let me move on to if there's any questions on any of this stuff, then I'm going to move on to presence and awareness and some policy management, which is some key things that I've been looking at. So presence is really knowledge of reachability. That's what it's about. And it's availability across all communication channels. We don't care transports, internet, wireless, wireline, doesn't matter. And if you see here, here's an example of CPIM, which is the standard used in IETF for simple. And what you send out is contact information. So you send out a contact priority information, say telephone or IM or some sort of protocol. But presence is not about communication, it's about availability. So presence sits above the communication protocols for that. Okay, so an example of that, I think most of you probably are familiar with the AOL. How many use AOL and MSN, things like that? So just for everybody, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, mostly young people.
Children.
Children. Yeah, so you know that's coming. It's everybody uses it. In fact, well, when I met with a colleague, she's investigating the value of instant messaging in commercial entities, and she works with a company that is involved with knowledge workers, and they use it all the time, constantly, all the time to talk to each other, and pretty well, it's the third method of communication now that's available and will stay here. It's email, IM, I guess, and on top of that, voice. Yeah, because... Well, since Microsoft got in the game, Microsoft is pretty well trying to dominate the client communication platform. And they've, in a sense, I think, dictated that that's the model they're going to use. MSN or Messenger will be a model of communicating on the client side. So I don't know what's happening with Linux. I'm using Microsoft, but Linux world, I don't know if they, I guess you still use the classic clients, but maybe, yeah, the ASOL. But what happens in Microsoft is they pretty well said, okay, that's what it's been integrated into XP, so it's becoming part of the OS, which is significant, because it means you'll end up using it just like you use the OS, the operating system. So just to give a flavor, some people don't know, but these are examples in SIP, but primarily you have people called watchers and percentages. So watchers are persons who watch you, and percentages are persons being watched. Now these terms are based on IETF's RFC on simple. So they're not terms I created. Watcher makes sense, percentage I never made sense to, but they use that term as a term that's being used in there. So what occurs is watchers subscribe to a percentage and they get some message back saying okay, and there's a presence server someplace. It's a service available. It could be MSN for us. We built our own, and a set of policies that dictate whether people can see you or not based on the subscription. We use policies that are extensions of a call processing language, CPL, and we actually have extended that for presence. And what happens is when somebody registers a percentage, then the watchers get notified of their availability. Pretty frightening, isn't it? That's because it's our server. And those are jacks for the phones and the networking. So that's a Mitel switch, a 3300 switch, actually, the back end of it. So this is the framework of a system we built. And like I said, we're leveraging SIP simple, and I think, I don't know if people are familiar with SIP, but it's a modern communication environment. I know in ad hoc networking it's probably never surfaced at all, but have you heard of SIP at all? Is it something that people are familiar with? It's basically the next protocol for IP telephony or IP communications, and it's driven by the IETF, and that's really catching on quite heavily. So we use SIP to communicate to a proxy, a registrar. And these has this number of presence agents on it that communicate to our system. And our system really is an agent-based system that, for every user, creates a set of personal presence agents and uses a tuple space to communicate among themselves. And the presence agents contain subscription and notification policies such that when the context of a person changes, then notifications are sent out based on their location, their activity, and their roles. I think it's three. I think we have one more. I think three of them. So what we can do right off the bat is we can create our own service and integrate it with Microsoft, like as a communication service. So this communication in the bottom here is our as a MSN Messenger client talking to us as a presence service. And on top of that, you also can use your own MSN. So the advantage of that is just that we get access to all the existing protocols of communication that MSN supports. That's the only reason we did that, because I don't want to rebuild video things. But what we've done with this is we moved it on to private groups and role-based
presence.
So private groups allows the creation of a small group of users that share a common presence or awareness. So the key thing about that is that you're more intimate with a small number of people than you are with a large number of people. So what we're looking at capturing is the ability to set up those little private groups that all have the same policies. So when you create a private group, the policies are distributed to the presence server, and everybody shares the same type of policies. In the role-based, what you can do is you can subscribe to particular roles, and then people can come and register for the roles. So you can be a lecturer, and you can turn around and say, well, I'm in the role of a lecturer. And what occurs is you might know who a lecturer is, but then you subscribe to a lecturer for a certain class, and as soon as they come available, you know about it. So it gives you some anonymity or expert discovery. So that's done by some additions put on top of the presence service that allows you to, it's called a role manager service and private group manager service. It allows you to create a private group, and then that interacts with our presence service so that for each member of the group, policies get set up. So there's a lot of network management policy work that's occurring in this area now, like that. Okay. So this is an interface. It's using the real-time communication protocols of SIP available through Microsoft. And what happens here is I have a group like Strat Tech Group, which is I belong to, and I can see members that belong to that group, like Peter Perry, who's my boss. And also you can see groups that are based on expertise, and personal expertise is the same as like buddy list. And at the same time, we can then do whatever, like instant messaging chats and things like that. There's no issue there. That's given pretty well. But what I can do now is I can subscribe to different groups, like Java experts or some form of device group person or some type of a nurse. It doesn't matter. That's kind of the advantages of the things we added onto the system. On the other end, it's the more exciting things. It's what can you do on the other side? Well, on the other side, we can capture availability context. So we create these master presence user agents, and what they do is they combine presence information from different devices. So a presence user agent is the term given again by the IETF of the agent that picks up information about your whereabouts, your activity, you know, your context, and then decides whether you're going to be registered or not onto the system. So what we need to do is create a master presence user agent to combine that. And we use now in phone systems a type of, study set where we try to determine based on different types of features that you put in on your phone whether you're available or not. So one of the most basic things is whether you're on the phone or not, you take it off and on. But we try to predict if you're off the phone, or if you're on the phone for a period of time that's pretty long, then we predict, well, how long do you think you're going to stay on after that? So we have decaying functionality based on that, and then we project that to other users. And you can do the same thing with workstations. So you can pick up information on the workstation and combine it with the information of a phone. So you can determine availability based on call control clues. And the way this works is we have this PBX, and we just monitor your features and what is happening all the time on your phone. And then we create an interpretation algorithm, send this off to the presence and subscription broadcasting service, which then sends out to other people that are on your list whether you're available or not. So these colors mean I'm not certain if you're available in orange. Red means nope, you're not available. Green means yep, I'm available. And this is the type of functionality we use, a function we use for that. We have like a predictor value. We have a zero level value. And what occurs is these availability values jump up or can be discrete in nature if you do certain things. Like say that you set up a feature that says don't disturb, then it's discrete in nature. Then that tells us that you're actually there, but you're in a don't disturb mode. And as soon as you release the don't disturb mode, then you get this decaying functionality of your availability. So for a period of time, you're available. Then you hit a zone in the middle where you're, in fact, you can't really say one way or the other if you're available or not. And it decays to the zero level. So it comes down to here, decay down to, so a default value will decay down to over here. And then you may have another discrete jump basically, if you're available on Alexa, if you pick up the phone, it's the same situation. You pick up a phone, you know the person's there, you can't contact them, but it's a discrete value to say that, hey, you know, I'm available for a period of time. If I've been on the phone for 10 minutes, then it's a good chance I'll be available after that. And up here? Callers like in the right hand side. This is actually running on the real system.
Yeah. But
oh, color. Oh, sorry, I think caller. I think of like caller, like calling. Yeah, actually, yeah, the buttons are in color. Yeah, so that'd be a problem. So, but now we have websets that use, they actually display a complete HTML page, so in that case you can use some sort of other icon. But this was just a situation where we had those lights on the phone, so we just used them. So you can turn a light on three ways, three colors, that's about all. Yeah, actually, I've never, colorblind people must have a problem with. So this, one of the challenges we're having with this work is we're looking at how do we combine now two types of availability sets together in a fuzzy manner so that if we get information from, I'll just move up a little bit, from both a workstation and a phone system and also a sensor in the room, then, and we create these availability sets, then how do we combine them together so that we can turn around and create a composite availability for a user. So this is a type of call control hints that we have. They're very common. But the availability on the right is what we've been defining. So do not disturb on means you're off, available. Depends whether the evidence changes or not. So you notice the evidence chart goes up and down. So if you are do not disturb is off, then your evidence goes up. And it's an evidentiary sort of accumulation. Call forward to voicemail, there's no evidence change, but it means that you're not available. So these are all typical features people can turn on. If you abandon an incoming call, then that means that your evidence goes down. So this is, we're trying to gather all this information and interpret some form of availability out of it. So one question is, well, what does this have to do with ad hoc? Well, to me, it has a lot to do with ad hoc, particularly when you consider formal and informal interactions. It's certainly not ad hoc networking for this, but all these attributes need to be combined to support like simple access to services and communications when persons come together. That's what's driving the ad hoc nature of things. So ad hoc networking is the networking component that's required to set up the connections. But there's a lot more that's required just to get the functionality working. So where we're going with this is on formal ad hoc forms of conferencing. What are we doing is we have a project, a couple of projects that are putting information or working in this area. And one is with the University of Ottawa. What happens there is we have two conferencing domains that are trying to get a session going. And what we're doing is using Presence to set up a conferencing session and share services across the two domains, both services that are included in the rooms and services that are foreign that people bring in. So persons from domain A will come in, register their own services on a laptop, and then that information will be passed on to the domain room manager in another domain and passed on to other members who are participating in, say, a voice session or a presentation session. So this is what we call presence-based associations and introduces to the private group the concept of trying to share services. So the trick here is really that the membership, a set of membership policies exists for the associations, and the associations manage resources. So we're moving presence into managing services is what we're trying to do. We're not dealing now with presence for people, but presence for services. And there's challenges in being able to project the services to people using protocols, presence protocols, for example. So associations can be created based on context that people come in. So you can come into a room, you can detect that you create association. or you can create it from people themselves can create it and put in visitors into it. So an example of that is some new work that Amir will be talking about later today, which is based on associations and handling, say, secure connections among members of the association. But a client, a person will come in for presence client, register the association, and then what will happen is the associations do policy and security updates using COPS and TLS into a secure service. So therefore, to do this, you manage the keys, you set up the keys properly, and then that changes the service so that you get a notification back. The notification is projected out to members who are part of the association. And the effect of that is that you can see things that are going on that are happening, say, among members of your group. And then after that, you can then start up a session between the service itself or between the clients. So before, I have a couple of slides, leave a few minutes to talk. So primarily what I hope I did was to show that ad hoc communications covers a lot of these four areas: facilitating service discovery, presence and awareness is very key in that area, policy management of availability, management of your communications, and the context, capturing the context is pretty crucial for that. So I'd like to, I guess, conclude with a couple of statements. First of all, ad hoc communications is a much bigger picture. And in some sense, I would encourage people to look at the bigger picture of communications than just the ad hoc networking. Ad hoc networking is a big part of things. But there is, to me, still there's a big problem in just doing ad hoc connections and communications in fixed networks. Not forgetting about just ad hoc networks, it's hard enough just to do it in what exists right now. So it's just not about ad hoc networking and routing, it's beyond that. And I think that some of the most challenging problems is in accessing services in conventional networks from ad hoc devices. And the challenge there really is in terms of, again, finding what the service is, using the right some service protocol that actually is descriptive enough, but also how do you get access to somebody's private service. One of the examples that was given in ad hoc networks was, for example, ad hoc voice connections. Okay, well, think about that. I mean, actually, that's a great idea, but most people look for services, like conferencing services. What happens when how are you going to supply those services to persons in an ad hoc network? You know, when you want to turn around and create a conference bridge, you can't do that. Somebody has to bring that service on board. So in the near future, in the next few years, people will want to get access to the existing networks because all the services are in the existing network. That's what people are basically providing for you. You know, your voicemail, for example. All that stuff, it fits on a service provider. Also think that proximity sensing and lightweight protocols with that will be important for device association. That would be a big issue in associating, say, whatever device you have. If you have a camera, how do I associate it to the telephone I'm using? How do I associate it to the headset I want to use? How do I associate it to another one? I don't think there's been a lot of work in that at all. Policy resolution is a very important area of work. In fact, just because you work in ad hoc networks or we work in voice over IP, the policy resolution problem is the dominant problem. You just can't get rid of it. You have to deal with policy feature interaction, and you have to resolve the features in a dynamic way. And we're all heading in this direction, which is basically context interpretation for automating the procedures for creating associations will be a big area of work. For us, anyway. So I just want to thank you and open up to any questions that you might have.